So in the beginning, it was, oh my God, how could I be so stupid? And how could I waste all that time? A lot of shame, a lot of guilt, a lot of self-hatred, a lot of self-doubt. And it has flipped. I have done some work and I am very proud of that. It is not an ego thing. It is not a bragging thing. I have figured out I am amazing. I am miraculous. I am incredible. And it was from the work.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Midlife with Courage. I am Kim Benoit, your host, and I'm so happy to have you all here. I'm also very happy to have my guest here with me today. Her name is Kristen Crabtree. Welcome to the podcast, Kristen.
Thank you, Kim. I'm very excited to be here.
Well, I'm glad to talk to you today. So tell us, before we jump into your story, just introduce yourself. Tell us a little bit about you.
My name is Kristen. I currently live in Massachusetts. What can I tell you about me? I'm 57, recently divorced, which we'll get into that story a little bit. And I'm in love with life.
I love that. I always ask all my guests, first question, tell us about a time when you felt courageous or you showed courage.
So interestingly, the message that I want people to hear from my story is that I did my biggest act of my life without courage. Like, I got the courage much later. So truly, all of my empowerment and feelings of courage have come out after the clarity and freedom of making my decision and action based on fear, anxiety, confusion, loss of power, and all of that.
And I want to get into your story because you have a story of acting before you were really sure, like you were just talking about. You didn't have that courage yet. So wherever you would like to start, share your story with us.
Thank you. And I guess I should answer the question about courage. I would say now and I didn't really think about this after I left, after I got the clarity, after I got in touch with who I am, all of that. My act of courage is probably, I lost my job in the process of all this madness in my life. And I have a master's in international business, but I haven't used it, right? I got it in 96. And so I'm pretty unmarketable, but I was trying to get a traditional job. And everybody in my life was pressuring me to do that because I needed stability. So my courage was saying, finally, after applying for 120 jobs, you know what? This isn't me. This isn't what I want. If it was what I wanted, I could probably do it. But I'm like fighting uphill because everybody else is saying this is what you have to do. And so probably my biggest act of courage was telling everybody to shut up and let me just be me and do what I'm called to do and trust that everything will work. So there's my act of courage.
That is a definite act of courage. I love it. So where did that call come from? How'd you get to that point?
Yeah, it was a fun and wild road. So I was in a psychologically abusive marriage for 22 years to a woman. And I say that intentionally because a lot of people think women can't abuse. And certainly women can't abuse women.
Oh, yes, they can.
Lesbian relationships are perfect. Oh, yeah. Anyways, I think that's relevant because it's eye-opener for some people. But what's really interesting about that, that I didn't know until I got out, was that she was able to control me so well and manipulate me so well because when she met me, I did not have a sense of safety or stability. And she was a police officer and she had financial stability. I had been raped when I was 15 and sexually assaulted when I was 13. And so I didn't know what boundaries were. I didn't feel like I could keep myself safe. I had just filed bankruptcy, so I didn't have the financial stability. I was living in a place of fear and victimhood. And she was able to use that for 20 plus years to keep me controlled. I could only be safe if I was with her. Sure. I could only be stable if I was with her. And that manipulation and that idea is what allowed me to forgive a lot of her behavior until it got so insanely horrible. And I had gotten a little bit of me back. And again, buy a little bit of me back. What happened was in 2021, January or February of 2021, so almost exactly 4 years ago, I went through trauma therapy. It wasn't EMDR, but for those of you who are looking into trauma therapy, EMDR is amazing, but it was a spinoff called Progressive Counting. And it was a very intensive 5-day, 8-hour-a-day version of it. And as I walked out of the therapist's office, he said to me, "You'll see some immediate changes. Really, it's over the next 2 years, your life is really going to change." And I remember feeling panicked. Oh my God, I don't want things to change. Things are perfect. And I thought my marriage was perfect because we never fought. But what I didn't realize was we never fought because I had learned, I had been trained to never disagree. And I'm going to pause there because some of you can probably relate to that and not even realize it. So I thought we had this great marriage. I thought we had a great life. We had all kinds of material things, investment properties, land, car, blah, blah. And so I didn't want things to change. And in 2021, when I was going through that therapy, a lot of people, when they get divorced, say, "Oh, my spouse is a narcissist." A lot of times during divorce, it does bring certain behaviors. But my wife truly was a narcissist. She really did have a pretty severe undiagnosed personality disorder. And she had, from the very early days, and I didn't have a name for that until I left. So I didn't realize that's what was happening. What I did know from the time we got together was that she had a mood fluctuation. Now, I want to put an asterisk there because I had just been diagnosed as bipolar. So I have no judgment about mental health, mood swings, whatever. But the manic episode is what actually caused my bankruptcy.
Oh, so, interesting.
Yeah. So I was, anyways. So before we got married, she had what I would call manic. Now, I'm not a diagnostician, but she had behavior that was very similar to manic behavior. And I told her that she needed to go get that addressed before I'd marry her. And she said, "If it's gone in January, can I not go to a therapist?" And I stupidly said, "Sure." It was gone in January, so we got married. The interesting thing was it took 14 years for the next big episode to happen. And I was always holding my breath, but hoping that maybe that was a one-time thing. But in 2014, so 13, 14 years, in 2014, she had another huge episode. And they lasted about 4 months, all the ones I'm about to tell you about. They all lasted about 4 months. And the rest of the time, she was pretty often in a deep depression. And I say we, drank a lot. For me, it was probably to survive the marriage. For her, I don't know. But in hindsight, I liked it when she drank because we didn't interact much. And so it enabled me to survive her behaviors. I'm now sober, by the way, almost exactly 2 years.
Congratulations.
Thank you. And so 2014, she had a really bad episode and it passed. And I thought, okay, every 14 years, I can do this. And then in 2021, she had another really big, crazy episode where my mother and my best friend were telling me, "You need to get a divorce. She's being abusive, verbally abusive." And I was like, "No, I'm not going to get a divorce." I didn't want to get married, but I committed to marriage and everybody else in my life has been divorced and I'm not going to be another person who gets divorced. So I was adamant that I was going to fix the marriage and survive this episode. And sure enough, after about 4 months, it passed. And again, she dumped into a deep depression. And so I was thinking, oh, shoot, that's only, do the math, 7 years. I don't know if I could do this every 7 years, but okay, I'll try. And I told her during the depression after that episode, next time that happens, I'm going to have to move out for a few months until it passes. Mm. And she said, And this is actually part of the story I've never said on a podcast. So you're getting a bonus. She said to me, if you do that, you're abandoning me. And everybody in my life has abandoned me. And so I said, okay, if this happens again, I won't move out. And I even said to her, let me ask you this. If your best friend described to you the behavior you had to me, would you suggest that they stay in the relationship? And she didn't respond. But I said it. And that was after my trauma therapy, but not that far after, probably a year after my trauma therapy. So things had started to shift, right?
I
had
Without
knowing it. Like none of this was conscious. It was just things that happened.
Yeah.
So yeah, 2021, I'm thinking, oh my God, every 7 years. And then we had that conversation. And then 2023, it happened again. That was our 20-year wedding anniversary. We were married in 2003. And I could always see right when it was coming on. And we were literally, we had just landed. We took a month and we traveled. And this is also part of the story I've never told. We had just traveled through Central Europe and we were gone almost a month. We landed in Boston. We had some friends meeting us in Boston, overlapping time with us. And during that time, it started. 2 years. Oh my God. I don't think I can do it. And I was getting ready to head out on an immediate trip to see my dad because it turns out his wife was having some challenges. And so I flew out to support him. I also was about to start a job and I didn't want to go through training around her. And so I took advantage of it to go be away from her. And it was virtual job, virtual training. As I'm getting ready to go to the airport to see my dad, this is just an example. And again, something I haven't told. I don't know why this is all coming out.
I have that effect on people. They just tell me things.
So I'm getting ready to get out. She's going to drive me to the airport. I'm getting ready to get in the car. And she demands my wallet. And I said, no. And she said, no, give me your wallet. And I didn't give it to her. And she went to my purse and she grabbed it out of my purse. And she took all my credit cards, all my debit cards, all my credit cards. And she gave me $100 and said, this is your allowance. Yes.
Oh, my. Yes. Oh, my.
That's the point it had gotten to. So this was in November of 2023. We fought about it as best as I could fight at the time, with mostly silence. And as I'm in visiting my dad in Chicago, the phone conversations were just getting worse and worse. And I demanded that we start therapy, and she had all sorts of rules about that. It has to be somebody who's been in law enforcement, and it has to be a man. And it's hard to find a therapist, period.
Yes.
And she wasn't taking that on. It was on my lap to find the person. So I found somebody that was married to a police officer and was female, but at least it almost fit the bill. So we started therapy, and God, it just went terrible. And the therapist had no idea the manipulation and control was happening. She she was just clueless. And when I got back from Chicago in January of 2024, so February of 2022 is when I did the trauma therapy. And then January of 2024, so almost exactly 2 years later, is when I called the therapist that I had gone to and said, I need to fix my marriage. Can you get me in as a therapist, be my regular therapist? And he said, sure. And we literally started on January 1st. So we just had our therapy anniversary.
Oh.
January 1st of 2024. And I went in to fix my marriage. And in February of that year, so not that far in, about a month and a half in, he looked at me in the eyes and he said, what else can you do to fix her so that your marriage is better? And I said, what else can I do to fix her? What else can I fix her? And he looked at me and he's like, are you kidding me? And I was like, what? And he's like, no amount of therapy that you can do to fix her.
I was going to say, that's a trick question, yeah. Wasn't it?
And I was like, oh, you're right.
Hello.
Okay. All right. So I'm getting this. So the light bulbs started to go off, but they still weren't blaring, but they were starting to go off. So March 3rd, I was journaling and it finally clicked. And I'm like, I have to get a divorce. And she called me on the phone to talk to me about, we were supposed to go hang out with friends that day. And she said, I had a really weird morning. This is all stuff I haven't said yet. She said, I had a really weird morning. And I said, I did too. And she said, oh, tell me about yours. And I said, I want a divorce. And she said, are you sure? And I said, yes. And she said, 100%. And I wasn't, but I said, yes, because I knew if I didn't say yes. And so oddly enough, she never wanted me. She wanted to make sure that we stayed in a business relationship so that we didn't have to disperse our assets. And this is all reflecting back. Like, yeah. I realized she never was like the emotional, the love, don't leave me. It was, we can live separate lives in the same house and have a business relationship and blah, blah, blah. So I found a place to move to, wretched, but inexpensive, all utilities paid, furnished, took pets so that we could share custody of our pets. And I let her know I was going to be moving out, and she said no.
We'll be back after a quick break.
Ladies, I am so excited about my new venture in this podcast. I'm calling it Midlife with Courage Unfiltered. You are going to get me, Kim Benoit, once or twice a month. I'm going to be getting real with you about the conversations that I have with my guests, and I'm going a little bit deeper. I'm going to bring my own personal experiences into it. I'm going to share what I've got going on in the hopes that you will share right back with me. This is not going to be me just talking in front of the microphone. I want your input. I want your participation. If you go to my show notes at the end of this episode, you'll see a support the show. That is where you can subscribe to Midlife with Courage Unfiltered. For only $5 a month, you're going to get this extra bonus content once, twice a month, and we're going to talk about what's really happening in midlife. I'm going to share my experiences. I'm going to get real. I'll probably get a little vulnerable. I'll be sharing things I don't normally share. So please subscribe so that you can get in on the founding members of this new Midlife with Courage Unfiltered. I'll see you there.
I was going to say, because you just said she wanted you to be in the same house together. So she wanted that control yet.
So she said, no. And I said, why? And she said, we can't afford it, which we could. But she said, we can't afford it. And she was in control of the money, obviously. And I canceled that. And the next week I found another place that was even cheaper, worse, really wretched conditions, and told her, okay, I found a cheaper place. I'm going to move out. And again, she said, no, you can't move out.
Yeah.
And so again, I canceled it. And I was talking with a friend, and she was a fairly new friend because I'd been isolated.
Sure.
I was in rural Vermont, which we moved to because of her. And all my friends that I had were on the East Coast or Mountain States. And so I had one friend that I had met in the last year. And I was on a walk with her, and I was singing the woes of my marriage and my life. And she said, why don't you just leave? Why don't you just move out? And I said, she won't let me. And my friend stopped and looked at me, again, like the therapist question, stopped and looked at me and said, you're a 55-year-old woman. You don't need her permission to move out. And it was like she took this giant bucket of ice-cold water and just threw it on me. Again, oh my God, she's right. I don't need her permission, and had a job and had money in the bank and my own savings account.
Yeah. It
annoyed my ex-wife that I had, but I did. And so I was like, she's never going to let me leave if she's in town, but she was getting ready to take a month-long trip, which she liked to do. And so my friend and I went and found a furnished place that was really cute in a town I had never lived in. That took pets and all utilities paid, but it was something I could afford and I didn't need to ask her for money. And I moved out when she was out of town. I took two carloads of stuff, and that was it. No furniture, just clothes.
Just your stuff.
Yeah, and the pets. Not with the intention of keeping them from her, but it was out of town. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So I took the three pets and enough stuff to fit in two carloads and left. And that was not an act of courage, to be clear. That was an act of, I will not survive in this marriage anymore. So about a week prior to this, maybe 2 weeks, I was on the bathroom floor, vomiting, unable to get up with my dad on speaker. And I was having an anxiety attack and saying, I can't leave, I can't leave, I can't leave. And he said to me, you don't have to leave now. You can stay till you're ready. And then my panic attack got worse. And I said, I can't stay, I can't stay, I can't stay. And so what had happened there was, and actually that is a line from Eat, Pray, Love that I didn't even know. Oh, apparently it's in the book and I didn't know that. But I can't leave and I can't stay. So for a long time, it's all relative, however long, the I can't leave part was stronger. And then it flipped and it went to the I can't stay part was stronger. So they both were still there. They were both still living together when I moved out. And when I moved out, the word that was like, all over my journals, in my head constantly, it was clarity. I just need clarity. I just need clarity. I'd go to metaphysical bookstores and buy candles for clarity.
And burn them.
And just try to get clarity. That is the word I wanted. So I left without clarity. I left without courage. And I really want people to hear that. Because at some point, just do it.
Just do it, yeah.
I felt afraid. I felt weak. I felt vulnerable. I felt scared. I felt like I was doing something illicit and frightening without permission, and fear of the unknown, fear of what wrath I would incur, fear of being able to support myself, fear of being safe, all that, right? But I wouldn't have survived if I had stayed there. I already was this big, like this much of me was left. And so I would have disappeared into nothingness or killed myself. When I was 13, I attempted suicide. So when I talk about being in love with life, it's pretty significant because I have had my moments of being ready to leave.
That is huge. That is really huge. Can you share about that trauma therapy? Was your ex-wife, did she support that? Or I can imagine she might have been like, oh no, why do you need to do that?
She knew I had trauma because she had used it against me.
Sure. Right? Yeah.
It was really severe when I met her. Gradually, I learned to manage it.
Okay.
They had a son together. Side note, by the time I left, he was 29, had autism and epilepsy, was living in an amazing community, had become my best friend after not wanting kids, not understanding what autism was, and having a horrible relationship with him up until COVID. And he died in April of last year.
Oh.
So lots of trauma last year. So your question was, did she support that? So
yeah.
It was actually baby's mama that suggested the trauma therapy because I started having a bit of a break spiraling at Christmas, whatever year that was, 2021. And I reached out to the therapist after that. And did my wife support it? She didn't forbid me. I think she thought it wouldn't work. She didn't really believe in therapy anyways, right?
Yeah.
So I think she probably didn't think there would be anything that would come out of it.
Okay.
So she didn't forbid me, but she certainly didn't encourage me.
Okay. Okay. I was just curious about that. It's interesting. And we, when we were going back and forth before we recorded, we were talking about how you mentioned it, just taking that action, and you weren't strong, you weren't courageous, but you knew that you had to do something. It sounds like it took a long time, obviously, but did you just wake up one day and say, it's time?
So yes and no. I mentioned being suicidal. So actually, before I met her, before I was diagnosed as bipolar, they had diagnosed me as chronically depressed. And I was on depression medication, which actually makes people bipolar worse. But there was a 2-year period in late 1990s when I had constant ruminations about killing myself, constant, all day long, every day for probably a couple of years. And there was always this teeny tiny little voice, so small, that would say, don't do that. Don't take that. And luckily, I was able to hear that little voice enough to not do that. And it's probably the same little teeny voice. Not probably. I know it is. It's my true self, my truth, my whatever.
Yeah.
That when things got really bad, was saying, isn't the way life is supposed to be. And I actually have this thing that I talk about. The true self can't text, unfortunately. And so the true self has to find ways to communicate with us.
Sure.
And it does it through emotions. And so this is my belief. This is in my book. So the true self says, this isn't right. So you have a decision you're faced with and your gut tells you, no, you shouldn't do this. But you ignore it and you do it. And then your true self is, okay, you didn't hear that. So now let's do this. And so you start to say it's a job. You take a job you knew you shouldn't take. You decided to take it because you needed the money. And the true self says, okay, so that didn't work. So let's do something more. And true self starts to give you some feelings in the pit of your stomach as you're driving to work and mild anxiety attacks, and still you don't listen. And so then true self is like, okay, so it keeps you from sleeping, gives you insomnia. You start to vomit on occasion. You don't listen to that. So then true self is, okay, let's hit you over the head with a 2x4 and see what happens then. So you either get like terribly ill, like cancer or some god-awful thing, or you go through a divorce or whatever, like something big happens and knocks you on your butt. And then true self is like, yay, she finally heard me. Finally. So yeah, so that's your true self can't text. So that's how your true self tries to, starts off whispering and then.
Yeah. Yeah. So you were in that relationship and in that situation for a long time, 20-year marriage. How do you look back at it?
So in the beginning, it was, oh my God, how could I be so stupid? And how could I waste all that time? A lot of shame, a lot of guilt, a lot of self-hatred, a lot of self-doubt. And it has flipped. I have done some work and I am very proud of that. It is not an ego thing. It is not a bragging thing. Mm-hmm. I have figured out I am amazing. I am miraculous. I am incredible. And it was from the work. So now, you know, the work I'm doing is because of the lessons I've learned and all those experiences and even the sexual assault and the rape and how that, and I don't know what your audience thinks about spiritually, but for me, somebody said this to me and it feels right. And that is that we're not humans with a soul. We're source having a human experience. Mm-hmm. And when you feel it that way, and it feels right to me because of my meditations, I feel like I've communed with source, so to speak. And when you see it that way, source is here in this body and in your body and in all these bodies because it can't experience anger and trauma and joy and orgasm as source. Like it can't do that. Mm-hmm. And so it comes here to experience all that. So that makes the anger and the trauma and the fear equal to the experience of joy and pleasure. Because it's just, it's part of the experience. It's part of what you are here to do. That doesn't mean you should wallow in the miserable feelings. I'm not
saying
that. I'm not saying that at all. But I am saying that there's value to that. There's value to that experience, especially if you are able to transmute it, to transform it, to transcend it, to go where you're really supposed to go, which is remembering who you are. Right. And that is, to me, the journey that I was on was the remembrance, remembering who I really am.
And that you mentioned that you had a little bit of you back. And now I feel like you're all back.
Oh, yeah. And you can see my house. So my every little thing about who I was, I didn't know. Like, I didn't know what kind of taste do I have in things, right? What are my values? What do I like? And she had beautiful taste. She liked mid-century modern. So it wasn't like I was in a horrible environment, but that wasn't my taste. When I met her, I was a hippie. Yes. I know that you listen.
I was wondering.
I've got this big India tapestry behind me. My living room is insanely me. I would take you on a tour if we had time.
Yeah.
It is bright colors and Indian tapestries and beaded curtains. And it is so me and so opposite. But when I look in there in the morning, I'm like, and I get this big smile on my face. So, yeah, I am about as me as I could be, which actually is the name of the book. I didn't put that together, but the book is Be You That's More You Than You've Ever Been.
Oh, so, I love that. Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
So that actually, that's where I am.
See, that's where it all ties together. Yep. I love it. So tell us about the book.
So the book is, it's what I experienced. Dr. Joe Dispenza was a very influential person on my transformation. And I came back from one of his retreats and I was sitting on my sofa and I'm like, okay, true self, what am I supposed to do now? And I got a really strange answer and it was immediate. Go find the book you wrote in 1999. And I barely remembered writing it. It had a different title, but I'm a digital hoarder. So I went and pulled it out of the deep, dark recesses of my backup drive and opened it to the first chapter. And the first chapter had 8 exercises. And the first one is called Who Am I? And I did the exercises and I was like, wow, these are brilliant. Who wrote these? And so I started reading the book again as the student instead of the author. And I realized that really what I had created back then was a process of excavation. So I rewrote the book, but the sort of structure is very similar. I believe that nobody knows our truth except us. So 7 steps to this and 10 steps to that ain't going to do it because it's not going to lead you to you. It's going to lead you somewhere, but not to you. And I don't have the answer to you, but I do have questions and exercises. So my book is structured according to the metaphor of the archaeologist, the artifact, and the architect. And the archaeologist is digging through your 4 bodies, your mental body, emotional body, physical body, and energetic body. And through that digging, and the digging is done first by giving you the qualifications to know the difference between rubble and artifact. So it's giving you the latest science, the latest metaphysics, the latest philosophy, the latest theory on that body. The second chapter in each section of the bodies is 100 questions-ish and 20 to 40 exercises that you don't have to do all of them, but they're there to help walk you through who am I, that uncovering. And what you do there is you dig up your artifacts. So you go from being the archaeologist to the artifact. And then the final section 5 is integration. And a lot of people know the pattern of you set a goal and there are steps to get to the goal. According to my paradigm, what I do in that section is I talk about both metaphysics and science that you don't necessarily have to believe. And it may or may not even be true. Some of these are theories that aren't proven, but I talk about consciousness and like the idea of that. And I talk about the artificial construct of time, and I talk about retrocausality. I make all this really easy to understand, and you've been learning about similar stuff in easy to understand words throughout the book. So some of it sounds like, but the reason I do that is because if you embody your true self, future self, true self, now, because there is no such thing as time. Really, truly, like time does not exist. We perceive time because we perceive a number of individual moments.
Sure.
And we stitch those together as time. And the other thing that you learn through the book is that we have filters. And this is true. Like we only see 0.01% of reality and actually even less than that. And our brain has to filter things out because if it doesn't, we can't survive in this world. We can't function. But what you see what you expect to see. So once you see the filter you're seeing through, you can then alter your filter, which alters the reality you live in.
Sure.
So if you embody your true self now and create that reality, so this is more than manifesting. This is like truly embodying this different reality that is right there. It's existing right there.
Right.
So integration is about doing that. So that's the book.
Love it. And I'm assuming it's out now, is it?
Yes, it's on Amazon and also my website. I've just finished the companion journal, which is more than just a place to jot down notes. It's also very expansive and exciting. You can do it without the journal, but the journal is great. I'm proud of it.
Yeah.
And there's a whole actually ecosystem that goes along with it. There's an app. I'm working on courses. There's a community. There's t-shirts that have messages on the back to help other people remember that maybe there's more.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's all on the website.
If there was one specific person that would be a good fit for what you're doing, who would that be? What would they be like?
It would be somebody who is in a transition moment. So that can be the marriage feels off or they know they need to divorce. It could be empty nest. It could be job change. It could be retirement. It could be I'm 30 years old. I got my degree. I've started my career. And oh my God, is this all there is to life? So it doesn't have to be somebody middle-aged, although probably most of the people are middle-aged, but it's the people asking that existential question, who am I, or is this all there is, in a moment of transition?
Yeah.
Or standing at the abyss of the transition moment.
Yeah, love it. And I'm sure that's a lot of my listeners out there, so that's very appropriate.
Oh, and asterisk, you don't have to believe any of the spiritual stuff that I said in this for the book to be helpful. This is just me blathering on about my beliefs, but the book is not about, and it is not, you do not have to believe. You can be Catholic or you can be nothing. It doesn't matter.
Sure. Sure. Sounds great. So Kristen, what does life look like for you now?
Oh my God. So when I started on this journey, I didn't know what a boundary was, which is typical of people who've been assaulted. And I had no concept of what the term intrinsic value was, which my therapist said, oh, you need to work on intrinsic value. I'm like, what's that? I am valuable. I am super, super amazing, miraculous, and valuable. And so are you, Kim. And so is everybody listening to this. We all are valuable and miraculous and amazing. And our job, in my opinion, is to remember. So it's not to learn it. It's not to change. It's not to get better. It's to remember our magnificent.
I just want to end it right there because that was a beautiful message. I love it. Kristen, thank you so much for spending time with me today and sharing your story. And I hope that we can connect again soon.
I would love that.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Midlife with Courage. If you liked what you heard, I would love it if you would leave a review. Or even better, send a link of this episode to a friend. Until next time. Take care of your beautiful self.